The hair on the back of the cook's neck stood up. It felt like he was being watched. He turned around. Nothing. It was Nellis Air Force Base in the middle of the night. The mess hall was empty. All the men were asleep in the barracks. The only people awake were him and a couple of guards at the front gate. The only reason he was up was to grab a little extra chow. One of the perks of being a cook, you get the keys to the kitchen. Then he heard rustling. He turned and something flashed in the corner of his eye. Something small and white, and it moved fast. A door quietly squealed open. Then he heard steps running into the desert. He caught glimpses of something white darting through the brush. He thought it was too big to be a rat, but maybe a coyote? He wasn't sure. Whatever it was, he didn't want it rooting around his kitchen. He picked up a rock and threw it toward the noise. Then he heard a whimper. As he reached his arm back for another throw, he felt a hot pain shoot through his body. He dropped the rock. He was paralyzed by pain and by fear. Then he heard a woman's voice from inside his own mind. She said, "Stop or die." The pain dissipated. As soon as he could move, he bolted back inside the kitchen. He locked the door behind him, terrified. He had no idea where the voice came from, but he knew one thing for sure. It wasn't human.
Did you meet the extraterrestrials or merely see them?
Oh, I met them many times, as I described in my books. Although I never went looking for them, they were always happy to come looking for me.
It was March 1965 when Charles Hall arrived at Nellis Air Force Base in the Nevada desert. He was fresh out of basic and excited to see his new post. When the Air Force tested Charles, he showed an aptitude for math and science. After graduating top of his class, he thought he could choose his own post, but he was specifically sent to Nellis.
Area 51!
Well, Area 51 is officially a detachment of Edwards Air Force Base, but yes, it's in the same area. Charles was trained as a weather observer. His job was to travel around the base taking readings. Most men would be bored to tears with this assignment, but Charles didn't mind. He'd get his own truck, extra pay, no officers breathing down his neck, and he liked the quiet of the desert. If he needed to blow off some steam, Las Vegas was close by. Plus, Charles had a friend on base. His buddy Dwight recommended him for the job. Charles was grateful for the opportunity. That night after he settled in, Charles and Dwight got to talking. They chatted about the base, how bad the food was, which officers were good guys, which ones to avoid. Typical soldier talk. Then suddenly, Dwight got very serious.
"Look, Charlie, summer's coming. You have to keep your eye out for Range 4 Harry. Old Harry likes it hot. He hides in the mountains during the winter. But once it warms up, he comes down to Indian Springs. He likes to run around on the dry lake bed up on Range 4. When you're up there, be careful."
Range 4 Harry? Charles had no idea what Dwight was talking about. He asked if this was some hermit who hid in the mountains.
No one would be crazy enough to run around a nuclear bombing range.
Well, that's what Charles thought. Dwight frowned and shook his head. Then he told Charlie the story of Range 4 Harry.
"Back in 54, there was an atomic bomb test over at Frenchman Flats. Harry is a horse who came too close to the blast. Not close enough to be vaporized, but close enough that something happened to him. Now, he gives off a white glow. If you see him, do not approach Range 4 Harry, and don't look at his face. He's not like a normal horse. Officers say he's more human-like, with large blue eyes and a long white tail."
Charles stared at Dwight for a long moment, then exploded into laughter. He expected some kind of hazing at his new post, and he figured Range 4 Harry was supposed to spook the new guy, but he wasn't falling for it.
"I'm serious, Charlie. While you're at Range 4, don't take any risks. The last guy who got too close to Harry was John Zimmerman. I don't want you to end up like him."
Charles laughed and promised to be careful. Still, he wasn't buying any of this nonsense. The next day, Charles was in the infirmary's waiting room. He needed a routine physical before going out into the field. The nurse on duty caught him chuckling to himself. She asked what was so funny. Charles recounted Duane's Range 4 Harry story and the fate of John Zimmerman. The nurse's face dropped. She said, "I'll be right back." Charles heard her opening and closing a metal cabinet. When she returned, she said, "I'm not supposed to show you this, but since you're going to Range 4, you need to know what's out there." It was Zimmerman's medical folder. Inside were four pictures. Each of them showed a man covered in horrible radiation burns. Zimmerman said a white horse came out of the North Range and charged him, but that was all he could remember. He somehow dragged himself back to Indian Springs, where an officer found him barely alive and in absolute agony. Charles's stomach sank. It wasn't a joke. Range 4 Harry was real. Charles finally met Sullivan, the man he'd be replacing. Sully was friendly, funny, and likable. The two men hit it off right away. Sully took Charles on a tour of a few weather shacks out in the ranges. One of the shacks was locked, so they couldn't access the equipment to take their readings. Sully told Charles to just write down any numbers.
Yeah, government precision.
Well, Charles reminded Sully that they only checked out three weather shacks. There were still four more, range 1, 2, 3, and 4. Sully's demeanor changed immediately. He said he'd take Charles to the other weather stations, all except range 4. When they got to range 1, Sully wouldn't leave the truck. He was terrified. He told Charles if he wanted to check out the weather shack, he'd have to go on his own. Sully said he'd keep a lookout, and if he saw anything, he'd go back to base for help. He told Charles, "If you hear me leave, lock yourself in the shack and wait. I'll come back for you."
Yeah, I don't like this plan.
Well, Charles asked if Sully was talking about Range 4 Harry, and Sullivan snapped at him and said there's no such thing. But Sully would not get out of the Jeep. He wouldn't even take his hands off the wheel. He was squeezing the steering wheel so tightly that his knuckles were white. This was not the same man Charles met just a few hours earlier. When Charles got to the weather shack, he checked the equipment and logbook. Nobody had been there for months. Sully had been secretly going off base and faking the numbers. He never stepped foot in those weather shacks.
Nobody noticed the guy kept disappearing. Right. Government precision.
When Charles returned to the Jeep, he confirmed that Sully had been lying about the numbers. Sullivan didn't care. He said he'd give Charles a tour and never wanted to go to the ranges again. Pretty soon, Charles would understand why. Over the next few months, Charles spent more time on the ranges at Indian Springs than anyone else. Against advice, he was usually out there alone, but he enjoyed it. It was peaceful, and he never saw Range 4 Harry. One day, Charles was out on the range, and it was especially hot. In the desert, the ground could reach 120 or 130 degrees, and today it felt even hotter than that. Charles spent most of the day in the weather shack. He didn't have air conditioning, but he had an old fan, and that was good enough. Besides, the sun was setting, and soon it would go from blistering hot to freezing cold. That was life in the desert. Feet up on the desk, Charles daydreamed as he gazed into the desert, watching the sky go from deep blue to orange to red. There was no sound except the songs of meadowlarks. Charles wondered to himself if meadowlarks were common in the desert. He didn't think so, but whatever birds they were, he enjoyed the sound. Then he saw something dart between the sagebrush. Charles blinked. There it was again. He assumed it was a large rabbit or a coyote, but it was covered in brilliant white fur. The more he focused, the more he realized it was moving erratically through the maze of sagebrush like it was in distress. Charles jumped out of his chair and threw open the door of the shack. Then he saw it. It wasn't a rabbit or a coyote. It was a child.
Describe them. I know we have an animated picture of what they look like on the website. Kind of describe the tall whites for us.
Well, the one that Paula has on her website is a very good rendition of a particular tall white lady. Each one of them are individuals, like the people, say, in New York City. But they were generally, throughout much of their adult life, they were about the same height as me, 5'11", 6 feet. Mm-hmm. They were very thin and frail. They had skin as white as a piece of paper. What I do know about them is that they come from a planet that's somewhat hotter than the Earth and somewhat larger than the Earth, and they naturally live underground.
The girl was barely 3 feet tall, and her skin was chalk white. She wore a silver jumpsuit and boots, and her hair was brilliant white blonde. Behind her bright blue eyes, she looked as terrified as Charles. She was tangled in the brush. He called out to her. He said there's no reason to be afraid. He wasn't going to hurt her. He cleared the sagebrush around her so she could easily get out, but he made himself clear that he wouldn't touch her. On a nearby fence post, he left a canteen of water. He said if she was lost, he would help her. All she had to do is ask. Charles turned back toward the shack. That's when he heard something crashing through the brush. It was big, and it was moving fast, and it was getting closer. Charles turned and saw something, a man, a very tall man. He had the same features as the little girl, pale skin, white hair, silver suit, and he was charging right at Charles. The sounds of the meadowlarks now became screeches. The peaceful desert had become chaos. Charles jumped back in the weather shack and barricaded the door. Did he just see Range 4 Harry? Charles wasn't sure, but he was sure that these people weren't human. Charles waited for what felt like hours. It was the middle of the night, and the desert was pitch black. The songbirds and the screeching had finally stopped. The only sound was a gentle rustling of wind through the brush. Charles gathered his nerves and left the shack. He checked his canteen. It was half empty. In the sand, he saw 3 sets of footprints, a child and 2 adults. Someone was there. Charles had seen enough. He scrambled to his Jeep, fired up the engine, and tore down the dirt road heading back to base. No more than a few minutes passed when Charles got another shock. Standing in the brush next to the road was an extremely tall woman, well over 6 feet tall. And like the child and the other entity, she had skin as white as chalk. Her hair was shimmering silver. She seemed to glow in the dark. Charles felt panic welling up when a feeling of calm suddenly washed over him. As he passed the tall woman, he could hear her in his mind. Telepathically, she thanked him for helping her daughter. Again, Charles felt his fear rising, but once again, there was calm. The woman, if that's what she was radiating peaceful energy and gratitude. Charles felt like he couldn't be afraid even if he tried. Charles hit the gas but checked his mirrors. After a few minutes, the woman disappeared, and with her went the feeling of peace and calm. Charles stopped his Jeep, stumbled out, and threw up. He was shaking and out of breath. Once he had his wind back, he vomited again. He didn't realize it then, but Charles had won the trust of one of the tall whites. At least that's what the U.S. government called them. The tall whites were not from Earth. The truth was, Charles wasn't sent to the ranges at Indian Springs by his commanding officers, nor was he recommended for the job by his friend Dwight. Charles was specially chosen by a committee of high-ranking generals, members of the government, and leaders of the tall whites. Throughout his time at Nellis, Charles was never told the full truth about his work. He was never given any classified briefings or documentation. He was never read into any black ops or secret government programs. Charles was just a weather observer. But the truth was, he was the one being observed. Late one night in 1896, Colonel H.G. Shaw was traveling in horse and buggy near Lodi, California. Suddenly, the horse became frightened and stopped. In the middle of the road were 3 7-foot-tall beings. The colonel described their skin as so white it looked like polished ivory.
Looking up, we beheld 3 strange beings. They resembled humans in many respects, but still, they were not like anything I had ever seen. They were nearly or quite 7 feet high and very slender. They were possessed of a strange and indescribable beauty.
Colonel Shaw said they didn't speak, but they made warbling sounds like birds. You can actually find this whole story online. It made the front page of the Stockton Evening Mail on November 25th, 1896. This is the first modern report of the tall white aliens, but their story on Earth goes back millennia. Paul Hellyer, the Canadian defense minister, was one of the first high-ranking government officials to acknowledge the alien presence. He became interested after a squadron of UFOs was mistaken to be Soviet aircraft.
An investigation was launched into this whole subject, and a document was prepared which concluded that at least four species had been visiting Earth for thousands of years.
You're probably familiar with a few of these species. There are a few variations of the grays, which are described as being under 4 feet tall, with large heads and large black eyes. There's a species called the Nordics, which are very human-like. There are the tall whites and a few others.
Other species that I learned about not too long ago were called the tall whites.
For years, it was rumored that at least one, or perhaps more than one, race of aliens made a deal with the United States government in early 1954. The defense minister agrees.
There are live ETs on Earth at this present time, and at least two of them probably working with the United States government.
Nobody knows the specifics of the arrangement.
The shadow government knows.
Well, yeah, they do, but the public doesn't. The best guess is that the U.S. would allow the aliens to build facilities on Earth without disruption. The U.S. would also allow aliens to abduct American citizens as long as they provided the government with the list of abductees. In exchange, the United States would have access to alien technology. The U.S. wanted anti-gravity and propulsion technology. The aliens would not give them this. They felt that humans were too violent and dangerous to be let out of our cage, which is this planet. However, the U.S. did receive help with other technology, the first of which was titanium. Now, titanium was discovered in 1791, but it wasn't until the 1950s that titanium began to be used for military aviation, specifically in high-performance jets, starting with the F-100 Super Sabres and Lockheed A-12s. The Super Sabre, by the way, is the first jet to break the sound barrier. If you think this craft looks like a stealth bomber, that's not by accident. The U.S. Air Force used a lot of alien technology to build stealth aircraft. Transistors are said to be alien tech. Transistors allowed the size of electronic devices to be made much smaller and lighter. Laser technology arrived in 1958. That same year, we got fiber optics. And also in 1958, we got the big one, the microchip. The following year, the first integrated circuit was developed. Now, skeptics dismiss these claims as coincidence, and I understand that. But consider this. In 1947, ENIAC was built. This was the first programmable electronic digital computer. It weighed 30 tons. It contained 18,000 vacuum tubes, 70,000 resistors, 10,000 capacitors, and 5 million hand-soldered joints. It took up an entire room. ENIAC was decommissioned in 1958 because all of that 30 tons of technology could now be placed on a single chip. That's quite a leap in tech in under 10 years. Satellites, wireless tech, unmanned aerial vehicles, even night vision. All this technology has allegedly been gifted to or reverse engineered by the United States military. Well, certain parts of the military. When Charles Hall gained the trust of the tall whites, they showed him some of this technology. They even let him see one of their scout ships. Actually, you've seen them too.
Did they tell you, Charles, where they were from? What star system they might have come up from?
One night I was there with a teacher, and I asked her where she came from, and she smiled and said, asked me, do I know the names of the stars that the tall whites use? And I said, no, I didn't. And she said, so why do you want to know where we come from? However, one night they were standing around me, and I mentioned the star Arcturus, and they all got real nervous.
Charles formed a friendship with the tall white woman whose child he helped find. She went by the name The Teacher. Charles later met Range 4 Harry, who is definitely not a radioactive horse. Range 4 Harry is a high-ranking tall white alien. The tall whites travel the stars in large, black, triangular titanium ships. Smaller scout crafts were used to travel within the solar system and around the Earth. These are roughly the size of a bus and can only land on Earth during the full moon. You've seen these scout crafts before. You just know them as the Tic Tac. Charles learned that the scout crafts aren't alien at all. Government contractors like Boeing and Lockheed are the ones building them.
Let's look at this. You know what this is?
Hey, this is a drone, bro. There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. The whole thing, dude.
This is an alternative energy and propulsion device. These are things that have existed all the way back to the 60s. But the one that they call the Tic Tac here off the coast of San Diego, the white one, looked very much like this. These have been made by the Lockheed Skunk Works.
Skunk Works is Lockheed Martin's advanced development program. It works on highly classified research as well as exotic aircraft platforms. Because of their deal with the U.S. government, most military personnel believe the tall whites use Earth as a truck stop in the middle of the solar system. Earth is rich in raw materials and has these smart little apes who can make somewhat decent vehicles. Through conversations during his 2-year post at Nellis, Charles learned the tall whites oversaw the development of a lot of human tech, but they've never taught us how to reach light speed or how to create the anti-gravity elements of their ships. Now, if you saw last week's episode on free energy and anti-gravity, you remember that anti-gravitic technology was very popular in the early 1950s. The entire aerospace industry was talking about it. Then suddenly, nobody was talking about it. The suspicion is the U.S. military had help in getting this tech to work, so they classified everything. Sometimes, the tall whites would take high-ranking military members on tours of the solar system. American generals wanted to expand humanity's operations to other planets. But the tall whites don't think we're ready yet. But Charles does think there's significant trade happening between the U.S. and the tall whites. And when they feel we're ready, the tall whites will finally allow us to inhabit other worlds. So, what did they want with someone like Charles? If these beings already had a working relationship with the U.S. government, why was Charles suddenly part of the equation? Well, the answer concerns the other part of the arrangement with the tall whites. Charles learned he was part of an experiment. He was being studied by the tall whites, especially by the teacher. He was fascinating to their species, and the teacher enjoyed spending time with Charles.
Yeah, I think of all the education that I missed, but then my homework was never quite like this.
The teacher taught Charles about her people, and he taught her about humans. Charles spent so much time with her that he became known as the teacher's pet.
Get it bad, get it bad, get it bad. Yeah, I'm half a teacher.
The tall white.
Get it bad, so bad. I'm half a teacher. Yeah, I'm just trying to liven things up. Go ahead.
The tall whites can speak English, but their natural voices are far higher and lower in range than humans. Their natural speech has been compared to songbirds. While tall whites may appear somewhat human, their abilities are quite different from ours. They possess the power to project powerful emotions into the human consciousness. They can also sense the emotional state of the humans they encounter. Even though the tall whites are naturally peaceful, they are always armed. They carry a pen-like object that can stun, damage, or even kill.
Ew, it sounds like a sonic screwdriver.
Kinda, yeah. But Charles was never in danger. He developed a deeply emotional relationship with the Tall Whites. Not much is known about Tall White biology. We know they age slowly. Their first stage of growth lasts until age 400. At this point, they stand between 6 and 7 feet tall. Then they go through a second growth stage. They can grow up to 8 or 9 feet tall, and their eyes turn from blue to pink. The average lifespan of a Tall White is about 800 years. Charles was never told where their home planet was. He felt they intentionally kept this a secret. However, when Charles mentioned the star Arcturus, they became uncomfortable. Arcturus is in the constellation of Bootes.
Booties.
Bootes.
It says booties on the teleprompter.
It's pronounced Bootes.
Whatever. The Black Knight satellite is supposed to be from Bootes.
Bootes. But you're right, that star system has come up before. Now, despite being a more advanced species, Tall Whites secretly fear humans' intuitive capabilities and ESP. They believe it's just a matter of time before the human race evolves the ability to tap into these powers. They believe we'll develop abilities like telepathy and telekinesis, which is moving objects with thought. They believe every human has the ability to project their consciousness to any place on Earth or beyond.
Remote viewing!
Right. Remote viewing researchers have said that every human has this ability, but only a few talented people have been able to tap into it. Ingo Swann, Pat Price, and Joe McMonagle were talented remote viewers who worked for military intelligence.
And Pat Price was killed because of it, don't forget.
That's the theory.
Remote viewing links below!
Yeah, we have a lot of episodes on that subject. Well, in total, Charles' experience with the Tall Whites lasted just 2 years, from 1965 to 1967. In 67, he was deployed to Vietnam, and he never saw the Tall Whites again. He waited almost 40 years to tell his story, but when he finally did, other witnesses came forward who had seen the Tall Whites. There was enough firsthand accounts that researchers started looking for evidence. The first step was to try to find the secret facilities built by the United States government. And somebody found them. When Charles Hall wanted to release his book Millennial Hospitality in 2002, no publisher would take it on. And that was a mistake. He self-published and the book was a hit. Two more books followed, and Charles made the typical rounds. UFO conventions, book signings, he did a few TV interviews. He even appeared on Coast to Coast with George Norrie in 2005.
When you work with aliens, I think you're legally required to go on Coast to Coast.
Well, if you want to sell books, that's the show to do. Now, all this attention brought out skeptics who wanted to prove Charles wrong. And it brought out the believers, determined to prove him right. And the more people that looked into Charles' story, the more of the story was confirmed to be true. Charles was at Nellis Air Force Base when he said he was. He was a weather observer. He was deployed to Vietnam in 67. All those facts are easily checked.
I want to hear about aliens.
I'm getting to them.
Get there faster.
Some of the best research I found was done by David Hilton. David's website is long gone, but it used to say he was a historian, anthropologist, and researcher. Now, on David's YouTube channel, he has a few videos that seem to confirm that Charles Hall was telling the truth.
I had an interest in the story of Charles Hall and the Tall Whites for a number of years. After reading his book, Millennial Hospitality, I was trying to locate the positioning of the weather stations on the bombing and gunnery ranges that he talks about in his book, so that I could better understand the orientation of the various locations.
When researching the story, David came across this photo. At the bottom is Creech Air Force Base in Indian Springs. Remember, even though Charles was stationed at Nellis, his work was done out here at the ranges, in and north of Indian Springs. The photo shows Range 1 in the southeast, Range 3 just north of the base, and Range 4 in the valley.
Oh, that's Harry's hood!
Right, that's where Range 4 Harry got his nickname. But what caught David's attention were the areas marked Scoutcraft Hangar, Scoutcraft Parking, and Resting and Play Area. Charles talks about these locations in his books, so David opened Google Earth to see what was out there. Now, before we zoom in, remember how Charles described the tall white scout crafts? They're about the size of a bus, white, and elliptical. In David's video, he shows this image. That looks like the Tic Tac UFO we've all seen by now. But here's the thing. David released his video 11 years ago, long before the Tic Tac was made public. Dr. Stephen Greer and others claim the Tic Tac is a UFO made by Skunk Works at Lockheed Martin. Now, Charles Hall doesn't specifically name Lockheed, but he does say that the scout craft are made by military contractors. Now, let's see what David finds on Google Earth. There is some kind of platform, and near the platform, three elliptical white objects, each about the size of a bus.
Tic Tacs!
They certainly look like it. And even if they're not alien scout craft...
They totally are.
Fine, but even if they're not, look at the location. There are no roads or even walking paths leading to this place. And this is exactly where Charles said the craft would be. He also said there was a recreation area here. That platform could be what he's talking about.
Tall white shooting oops!
Could be. So David and people in his audience started scouring Google Earth around the old bombing ranges.
Oh, did they find more alien playgrounds?
Yep, lots more.
One of the first sites listed on the video is just off the end of the runway at Creech Air Force Base. This seems to agree with Charles Hall's story of the aliens coming onto the base from the northwest corner at the end of the runway.
In total, David was able to find 18 separate sites. Other people found a few more. I included some coordinates in the description if you want to check them out for yourself. Now, some of the locations David shows have been scrubbed by Google Earth.
Predictable.
But his video is from 2013, so we can see the locations before they were erased. Most of them are man-made structures, but with no apparent access.
Yeah, because you access them from underground.
That is the theory. But building a tunnel system of this size underneath the bombing range would be an enormous undertaking and extremely expensive. If such a project did indeed occur, you'd expect there to be evidence.
There's evidence, isn't there?
Yep.
Yahtzee!
Not only is there evidence of a major construction project, there's evidence of a black budget cover-up.
Yahtzee.
To build an underground base with miles and miles of tunnels, it's going to be a huge undertaking and wildly expensive. But there's evidence that this project did happen. In January 1951, an article was published in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and the headline is Indian Springs Project Key to Defense Plans. The project is said to cost $300 million, and that's in 1951. In today's money, that would be $3.6 billion. For comparison, that's about what it cost to build the Freedom Tower in New York. The article said most of the money was to build housing and offices. Look at the base. Do you see billions of dollars worth of construction anywhere? I don't. So where'd the money go? Again, the credit goes to David Hilton for tracking down this information. According to the article, the contract was awarded to the McKee Construction Company in El Paso, Texas. Government contracts are public information. So let's look at the records the McKee Construction Company has for this job. Job number 1267. Description, alternate test site facilities. Location, Las Vegas, Nevada. Contract started on December 23, 1950 and ended May 23, 1951. Total contract cost, $680,000.
My math isn't my strong suit, but
But about $299 of that $300 million is missing.
Black budget!
It looks that way, but we don't know for sure. Even the article from 1951 says, quote, "The actual details of the program are cloaked in a security blackout." When Las Vegas residents learned about the huge construction project, locals contacted the base looking for work. They were told the military would be using no outside labor for this project. But that $300 million went somewhere. If we don't see that money spent above ground, there's only one other place it could be.
Underground?
Yep.
Holy sh...
Charles Charles Hall and the Tall Whites is considered one of the most credible stories about aliens living with and working with humans here on Earth. But is it true? Well, like many of these stories, we have no physical evidence. We only have the word of the author, in this case, Charles. Do you believe him? Well, most of today's story comes from Charles's books and the documentary Walking with the Tall Whites, both linked below. When Charles tells the story, he sounds sincere. But I've heard many stories from people who sound sincere and turned out to be frauds, and I've outed a few of them on this channel. Now, I don't have evidence that Charles Hall is a fraud, but parts of his story do bother me. First, he released his books, and there are six of them now, as science fiction. Only later did he say these things really happened. Now, supporters of the story will mention three other witnesses who were with Charles at Nellis Air Force Base. They say his story is true. But those witnesses didn't give their names. They're only known as witnesses A, B, and C. And to complicate matters, on January 13th, 2014, Forbes published an article with a strange headline. Iran says tall white space aliens control America. The article says the United States is ruled by a species of tall white aliens who made a deal with President Eisenhower in 1954. The article also says the tall whites helped bring the Nazis to power in the 1930s. Apparently, this information was discovered by Edward Snowden.
Wait. So this is real?
No. Forbes was covering a story first reported by the Fars News Agency, operated by the Iranian government. Forbes said the article is most likely Russian disinformation designed by the FSB, Russian intelligence.
Oh, the American media sure loves to publish Russian disinformation, don't they?
They sure do. Now, I don't believe anything that comes from the Iranian or Russian media.
Oh, but you trust American media?
No.
Yeah, the boy.
But what if they accidentally got something right? That the United States is being controlled by what the article calls a secret regime. I don't know if Charles Hall is telling the truth. I don't know if the tall whites exist. It's up to you to decide. But the secret regime, the shadow government, I do believe that exists. And I'm far from the only one.
And the cabal comprises members of the Three Sisters, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission, elected by no one, the International Banking Cartel, accountable to no one, the Oil Cartel, members of various intelligence organizations, and select members of the military unit, who together have become a shadow government of not only the United States, but of much of the Western world.
The plan is well advanced.
Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. My name is AJ, that's Echofish.
Yeah, man, I think the clock is slow. I don't feel tardy. Class dismissed!
This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do us a favor, subscribe, comment, like, share. That stuff really helps us out. And like most topics we cover on the channel, today's was recommended by you. So if there's a story you want to see or learn more about, go to theyfiles.com/tips. Remember, The Y-Files is also a podcast. Twice a week, I post deep dives into the stories we cover here on the channel. I also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed on the channel. Those are called Unredacted. Anyway, it's called The Y-Files Operation Podcast. It's available everywhere you get your podcasts. Now, if you need more Y-Files in your life, check out our Discord. There are tens of thousands of people on there, and they're there 24/7. And they're into the same weird stuff that we are. It's a great community, it's a lot of fun, and it's free to join. Now, if you want to know what's going on with The Y-Files, check out our production calendar. It's at theyfiles.com/cal. There we post our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, meetups, everything. Now, special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible. Without you, there'd be no Y-Files. I can't thank you enough for supporting the channel all through these years and for making a middle-aged man's dream come true. I'm truly grateful for you. And if you'd like to support the channel, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, you get access to merch only available to members, plus you get 2 private live streams every week just for members. My camera's on and your camera's on. We get to have an intimate conversation. As intimate as my wife allows, that is. Anyway, another great way to support the channel is grab something from the Y-Files store.
I grab a Hecklefish t-shirt with my face on it, or a Fistable coffee mug that you can fill with a delicious beverage, perhaps one that's carbonated, or a hoodie with my face on it, One of these squeezy stuffed animal heckinfish talking heckle. I can't even pronounce my own name during the plugs. Hecklefish talking fish toys.
And those are the plugs. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
In Area 51, a secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. Got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. We're in a simulation, don't you worry though. The Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe I'm dancing with the fish. Hecklefish on Thursday nights with AJ2 and the I'm